Jackman let out a long whistle. How many more assisted suicides are we going to find?
But they can't be connected, can they?
Marie asked incredulously.
I don't think that's the case, Gary said. I think this was a prison thing. The kid got caught between two rivals, and from what I gather, he was collateral damage. Someone wanted him badly, and someone else helped him find a way out. That, or it was a case of, if I can't have him, no one will.
It's still another travesty of justice, isn't it? Jackman's face was grim. If it's true. And we'll never prove it.
A load of cons admitting something like that, I don't think so. Marie snorted.
I know it's just hearsay, Gary added, but it gives us more of an insight into what the mood was like at the time.
Did your guy tell you anything else? Asked Jackman.
He said he thought the kid was innocent, and I trust his judgment.
He looked hard at Jackman.
So maybe the Simmons family were right all along. Did you get any vibes when you met them, sir?
Angry family, Gary. Hard to read.
Marie and I both have mixed feelings about them.
Jackman described their visit.
Where are Rosie and Max, by the way?
Robbie looked up from the pile of paperwork that he was working on.
The super sent him on an errand, sir. The foreman of the jury at the Ashcroft trial is unaccounted for. He's the only one who hasn't been notified of possible danger. She's asked them to try and locate him.
Marie threw a worried glance at Jackman.
Why does all the news today sound so menacing?
The deeper we dig, the darker it gets, Jackman proclaimed.
Very profound, sir, Gary said. Anyone fancy a doughnut?
Max straightened his tie and pressed the bell. The address they had been given was a neat semi-detached in a quiet road that ran behind the busy high street. He pointed to the garden.
Holiday, maybe? He said to Rosie. I mean, all the flower beds are weeded with the edges done, but the grass hasn't been cut for a week or two.
He rang, and they waited, but there was still no answer. Rosie went next door. The woman who opened the door was in her 30s and wearing startling pink gym kit.
Just caught me. I'm off to Zumba.
She stared at Rosie's warrant card.
Oh, is something wrong?
It's Mr. Whitman. Do you know if he's on holiday? We need to contact him rather urgently.
I'm afraid I can't help you there.
The woman looked worried.
I said to my Pete, it's not like Isaac to go off and not tell us. He does go away quite a bit. He has a caravan in one of those seaside parks on the East Yorkshire coast. But generally we feed his fish and put his bins out for him. This time he never mentioned a holiday, but we haven't seen him for weeks.
Do you know if he has any close relatives that we could contact?
He has a sister who runs one of the little antique shops in the town. It's called Bygone Treasures, I think. Her name is Victoria Whitman.
She glanced at her watch.
I really can't tell you any more.
Rosie smiled.
Thank you for your help. We'll go and see his sister. Enjoy your class.
The door closed and Max asked,
What's Zumba?
Dance fitness. Bit too vigorous for me.
Max grinned lasciviously.
Oh, I don't know. I've always found you pretty vigorous.
Shut up, Max, or I'll be arrested for assaulting a police officer. Now, where is this antique shop?
This is Horncastle, you know. It's full of antique shops. Why don't we go to the first one we see and ask?
They left the car and took a footpath through to the busy, narrow high street.
Okay, this will do.
Rosie pointed to a bookshop that boasted antiquarian second-hand and collectible books. Inside, it looked like a fire hazard just waiting for a match. Volumes were stacked from floor to ceiling in wobbly towers, on shelves, and bursting from cupboard doors.
People buy this crap,
muttered Max, wrinkling his nose. The dusty tomes gave off a musty smell. Rosie brushed the cobwebs off a dog-eared Rupert the Bear annual and shook her head.
Pass.
It took a few moments to locate the proprietor, hidden behind a stack of National Geographic magazines. Rosie had to fight back the urge to tell him they were from the Health and Safety Executive.
"Sorry to disturb you, sir, but can you tell us where we can find a shop called Bygone Treasures?"
Relief flooded the man's face and he replied eagerly,
"Oh yes, it's about 500 yards up the high street, opposite a little tea shop called Go Into Pot."
She heard a snort, thanked the man hastily, and hustled Max out. Bygone Treasures was locked, with a big closed sign on the door. Frowning, Rosie stared at the shabby exterior.
"I'm not getting a good feeling about this. What about you?"
Max tried the door, but it was firmly locked and bolted.
"Let's go next door, see if they know anything."
The shop assistant in the small boutique gift shop shook her head.
"Victoria did mention going on a buying trip. She goes to the big flea market in Lille to bring back pieces for the shop, but she always pops in and tells us when she's off. We have a key, just in case of emergencies. These are old buildings and things do go wrong."
Rosie thought of the bookshop and smiled.
"We have concerns about her brother Isaac. Do you know him by any chance?"
Tracy nodded.
"Nice man. Very supportive of his sister. They're twins, you know. Not identical, but so much alike."
She stared at them.
"He's not in any trouble, is he?"
"Oh no, not at all. We just need to contact him rather urgently."
"You've tried his home? He lives just off the high street in Lime Walk."
Rosie nodded.
"Same story there. Goes away a lot, but this time he hasn't told the neighbours."
Tracy took a deep breath, opened a drawer under the counter and produced the shiny key.
"It's for the back door. Vic always bolts the front one from the inside and leaves the back way. You get to it down the alleyway, two doors up the street. Please do let me have it back, won't you?"
Rosie assured her they would, though she was doubtful. With every minute that passed, she was feeling more and more concerned. She knew that the killer liked to target his victims' weak points, and what could be more of an Achilles' heel than a twin sister? While Rosie and Max hurried down the alley, Yvette and Susie were making tea. Susie's hand shook slightly as she added milk to the mugs.
"I'm still shell-shocked after that visit from the police."
Yvette nodded.
"Me too. I can't stop thinking about it. And it's made me even more worried about Dale and Liam."
Susie straightened up.
"Surely you can't think they would do anything that terrible. Not our brothers."
"Sorry, Susie, but I told you they scare me. To be honest, I don't know what to think anymore. Someone is taking things into their own hands, and if it's not one of us, who else could it possibly be? Who would care so passionately?"
Susie sank onto a kitchen chair and stared at the milk carton as if willing it to speak.
"There were others, Evie. You know that. There still are. We have loyal supporters who, like us, have never given up."
She paused.
"I thought some of them were more driven than we were. I can name three or four that I always thought were too involved, almost unhealthily so."
Yvette sighed.
"I know who you mean. Let's pray it's one of them and not our family. But you have to agree that the boys aren't making things any easier for us. They need to back off."
"We should have a family gathering and tell them."
"Do we give the names of our supporters to the police?" Yvette asked.
"Absolutely. We need to take the heat off the family. We must do all we can to help the police, even if it does go against the grain after all we've suffered.
To protect the family, and to try to give Mum some answers before..."
"Exactly, Evie. Before it's too late."
Chapter 18. Considering the state of the rest of the building, Max was surprised to find a modern UPVC replacement door at the back. He glanced at the lock.
"Dharma's standard snap-proof lock. Victoria doesn't want any thieves getting their sticky hands on her bygone treasures, that's for sure."
He took the key from Rosie, unlocked the door and stepped inside. Again, he wrinkled his nose. He hated the smell of old places. Max liked smart. He liked new. He found the stench of mildew, must and decay disgusting. And this place smelt of them all. Yet he loved old architecture and appreciated ornate structures and beautiful design, just not up close. They were standing in a small kitchen area. Its old butler sink and retro cabinets in cream and green were pure 1950s. On a small pine table, covered in a plastic cloth, were unwashed plates, cups and cutlery.
"Not good," he whispered. "Not good at all. Should we ring this in?"
Rosie was staring at a mouldy loaf and a packet of rancid butter, still open on the table.
"Better see what we've got first, I guess."
Max grasped the doorknob and opened it. The smell hit them immediately, and it wasn't musty old antiques. Max was afraid. Not for himself and what he might find, but for the effect it would have on the already shaky Rosie. This case had upset her from the word go, and he was terrified that the coming revelation would send her into freefall.
"You're right, Flower. We need to ring this in. You go contact the governor. I'll check this out."
"On your bike. We do this together. Rosie, I know what you're trying to do, Max, and I love you for it. But when we're on duty, I'm a policewoman first and your girlfriend second. We do this by the book. We investigate, observe, touch nothing, and report in, okay?"
Max said nothing. But he wanted to tell her that it was the policewoman he was worried about. She had already told him she couldn't cope with the type of punishment this killer dished out. With a sigh, he pushed the door open and they entered a dingy hallway that led into the shop itself. The smell intensified, and he gagged. Not daring to look at Rosie, he went into the shop and quickly checked around. He could see nothing untoward, which just left upstairs. He hesitated at the foot of the stairs, and Rosie pushed past him.
"For heaven's sake, Max, let's get this over with. We know it's going to be shitty, let's just do it."
Upstairs they found two doors, one half open and the other closed. They glanced at each other. Rosie pushed the closed one, and it swung open. They stood in the doorway and stared. It was as if they were looking at a dimly lit tableau in some waxwork museum. Every item in what had apparently been a stockroom had been pushed against the walls and stacked haphazardly in piles, apart from two chairs and a table. The chairs were Victorian, with intricately carved high backs. They were set opposite each other, one each side of a narrow, heavy oak table, and both were occupied. Rosie grasped his hand, and he heard her take a deep, shaky breath.
"Oh, dear Lord, what has he done this time?"
she murmured. Together they stepped closer, but kept a good distance from the scene, ostensibly to protect the integrity of the crime scene, but Max didn't want either of them getting too close. After joining the force, Max had quickly discovered that he was unable to look death in the face. He could cope with the most terrible accidents, and even gruesome murders, but he couldn't face the eyes of the dead.
"What's actually happened here? And why is it so hot?"
The quiver in Rosie's voice told him she was struggling to stay calm. On the table were two big plastic beakers that Max presumed to have held water, and a mass of packets of tablets. Most were opened, their foil strips empty. A man and a woman, who he assumed to be Isaac and Victoria, were tied to the chairs with wide bands around their waists and ropes around their legs. Their upper arms were strapped tight to their bodies, but their lower arms and hands were free.
"The heat's coming from those two portable electric heaters," Max swallowed hard. "And knowing what's happened with our other victims, I'm thinking he somehow coerced them into taking lethal doses of drugs."
That's what I thought. The bastard.
Rosie was close to tears.
We've seen enough. Time to call it in.
Max turned away. She nodded.
We've seen too much.
Max pulled her back through the door. He looked at her face and made a vain attempt at gallows humour.
Any guesses at what old Rory Wilkinson will say when he sees this? How about I'll not be attending any of their dinner parties? Or maybe... Shut up, Max. Just shut up.
Rosie ran down the stairs and out of the back door. Max closed the door on the grisly scene and went after her. He found her sitting in the yard with her back to the fence, her head in her hands. Max sank down beside her and put his arms around her. She was shaking with sobs. For once, Max managed to keep his mouth shut and just held her close.
Just heard from Max.
Jackman stood up and called across the CID room.
The killer has struck again, this time two victims at one location.
The jury foreman?
Asked Marie. Jackman nodded.
And his sister.
Socos are on their way there now, and the local bobbies have secured the area for us.
Marie, I need a private word.
She followed him into his office, not liking the pallor off his face. He closed the door, and without waiting to sit down, said,
Max rang, and he's worried sick about Rosie. She's taken this one really badly.
What? Our Rosie?
This just didn't ring true. Had the killer done something truly horrific this time?
Does Max know what the problem is?
He said that she's been edgy about this case ever since we started investigating. The killer's callousness and ruthlessness has really got to her. Then, seeing these two bodies... Jackman began to pace the room.
Are you thinking about pulling her off the case, sir?
It's worse, Marie.
Max says she's talking about chucking it all in, giving up her career. Marie gasped.
Rosie's a first-class detective. She can't mean it.
We all have one case that hits us harder than most, and maybe this is hers. We'll get her through it if that's what she wants.
Jackman shrugged.
But for now, we have a double killing to attend to. Are you ready?
As I'll ever be. Lead on, boss.
On their way to the car park, Jackman told her what Max had said.
Rosie sounds in a bad way, Marie.
Max said she couldn't stop crying, and that's not like her. I've just checked and the FMO is coming in later. Maybe he can talk to her.
Good idea. He's a nice man, I'm sure he'll help her.
Before she could continue, Jackman's phone rang and he stood still, frowning.
Yes, Miss Simmons, of course I remember you.
Marie waited, wondering why one of the Simmons family was ringing Jackman on his mobile.
Later this afternoon, 4:30 would be good. I have something to sort out now, but I'll be back by then.
Okay, see you later. He ended the call, looked at Marie and shrugged. Yvette Simmons says that the family will talk to us, but she wondered if she could be first and she'd prefer to come to the station.
So the rest of the family don't hear what she has to say?
Marie added.
That would be my guess.
She sounded as if it was urgent. Marie got into the car.
Does she know something, do you think?
Jackman started the engine.
Let's hope so.
Rory Wilkinson was already at the crime scene when they arrived.
You do like to shower me with different versions of death, don't you? And the weirder the better, it would seem.
He peered at them over the top of his glasses. Jackman and Marie were still trying to take in what they were seeing.
Bizarre, muttered Jackman.
Grotesque,
added Marie, fighting back the urge to retch. The stench in the hot, airless room was overpowering.
Indeed, and our fiendish killer decided to confuse the poor pathologist even more by sealing the doors and windows tightly and leaving two electric heaters on full. Silly things like that play havoc with determining time of death.
Jackman stared at the two bodies. Their bonds held them in an upright sitting position, although their heads had fallen forward. He saw that they were holding hands across the table, touching.
Who died first, Rory? Any idea yet?
I'd say most probably the man, although I need to do extensive tests. He drew in an exasperated breath. Putrefaction. The whole time of death is going to come down to the rate of decay, and because of the hot, stuffy atmosphere, even that will be difficult.
Jackman noticed that Rory wasn't his usual jovial self. The fetid air must be getting to him, too.
Have they been here long, Rory?
I'm not asking for the impossible, I just want to get some idea of what happened.
The pathologist stood back and looked steadily at the dead woman.
They've probably been here for around 10 days, but I don't think they've been dead for more than 2. He shrugged. I know that sounds odd, but I think they were imprisoned here for quite a while. Maybe even 2 weeks. The fatal doses of tablets were not taken until 2 or 3 days ago.
Murray looked at the empty packets.
What are the tablets?
Paracetamol, amitriptyline, an antidepressant, and oxazepam, an insomnia medication by the looks of it. We'll do a toxicology report just in case the packets are a red herring and they've been given something completely different. Nothing would surprise me.
Me neither.
Jackman glanced at Marie.
I think it's time we got out of here before one or both of us throws up and contaminates the scene.
Marie moved smartly to the doorway. Rory chuckled behind his mask.
Lightweights? Sorry, but the smell is absolutely disgusting.
I dare say you'd be a bit pongy too if you'd been made to sit in a chair for a fortnight.
Marie groaned.
This killer is too sick for words. I've never encountered anyone so...
She spread her hands at a loss for words.
So inhuman,
finished Jackman.
I think that's what's got to Rosie.
Rory looked up.
Ah, young Rosie McKeldry. You need to watch that lass very carefully, Detective Inspector. The bad old years of stiff upper lip and soldier on regardless are long gone. I saw her when I arrived, and unless I'm very much mistaken, she needs help.
Jackman nodded.
The FMO is coming in later. I'll make sure they have some time to talk.
Good. Now, since you weedy children are deserting me, I'd better get on. I'm sure these two souls will be much happier in my morgue than they are in this stuffy room.
Marie felt as if she would never escape that terrible smell. It seemed to envelop her, and it clung to her clothes and her hair. All she wanted was to go home and take a long hot shower, but Yvette Simmons was due right now. Yvette was punctual to the minute, and soon Marie was sitting alongside Jackman in interview room 2. Yvette seemed to have prepared exactly what she wanted to say, and began immediately.
There is no doubt that my brothers Dale and Liam are still totally committed to our cause, and because of that I'm sure you will be very thorough when you check out what they were doing at the time of these deaths. However, she paused and looked at each of them, there are certain people who have spent years helping to find a way to clear Brendan's name. Susie and I both agree that...
She looked down.
That they...
She let out a sigh of exasperation.
Oh, how can I say it? Frankly, Inspector, we don't know why they have been so motivated for so long. They seem to be even more passionate about it than us.
Some people love a good cause to grab hold of, volunteered Marie.
Susie said exactly the same thing. They need some kind of crusade in their lives to give them meaning.
Jackman nodded.
That's very possible. So do any of these supporters give you cause for concern?
Yvette seemed to relax now that her point had been made.
I could be maligning them, but they all seem a bit full on at times.
Names?
Asked Jackman. Yvette placed a sheet of paper on the table and pushed it across.
I'd rather this stayed between us, if that's okay. If your investigation includes checking the people who have helped us, then these names would come up anyway, but they are the ones Susie and I agree are perhaps a little worrying.
Marie leaned over to look, but the names written on the paper meant nothing to her.
I recognize one name, said Jackman. He's a doctor, isn't he?
Retired doctor, yes. Mark Courtney. He's a very intelligent man, Inspector, but actually we found him rather overpowering. We are working folk, and sometimes he seemed more concerned with theories and big words. Still, he really knew how to put together a speech for the newspapers or for anything legal. He was Dad's right-hand man until our father died. Then he supported Mum when she took over the campaign.
And he still does? Asked Marie.
Oh, yes. In fact, now Mum is ill, he's taken on a lot of the organization.
Marie frowned. Wouldn't it be better if a member of the family did that?
Yvette looked at her rather sadly.
Probably. But it's been so long now. I have to admit that I've had enough. So have Susie and Kenny, though don't tell them I said so.
Jackman's voice was gentle. You still believe that your brother was innocent, though, don't you?
Yvette looked worn out.
He never did it. End of story. But we have no evidence. And Brendan is never coming back. So what are we really doing it for?
For justice, said Jackman quietly.
Marie knew that Jackman was thinking of Gary's informant, the man who swore that Brendan was telling the truth. Yvette frowned and stared at Jackman.
Am I imagining this? Is a policeman telling me that we could be right?
I'm just saying that I understand why you're doing it. You are convinced he was wrongly convicted, and that his incarceration caused his death. I think you have every right to protest.
Yvette let out a little laugh.
Why weren't you around when we started this? We might just have won a retrial.
Jackman raised his hand.
I wouldn't go that far.
No one listened to us. No one.
Marie thought Yvette was about to cry. She said,
We are listening now.
Yvette took a handkerchief from her pocket and wiped her eyes.
Could you help us?
Who knows what we may turn up as we investigate these deaths, but frankly, Yvette, I doubt we'll ever get irrefutable proof after all these years, Jackman said evenly. But don't give up hope.
He picked up the sheet of paper with the names on it. Mark Courtney, Christian Ventner, Art Pullen, and Jeremy Shaw. According to the Simmons sisters, each man was either extreme or militant.
Thank you for bringing them to our attention. We will definitely interview them.
Jackman smiled.
Regarding the rest of the family, is there anything we should know? Like how to approach Dale without getting an earful?
Liam's the one you need to watch. He's wild, always was, and I think he'd be lost without the cause.
What about Kenny? He didn't have much to say when we visited you.
Don't let him fool you, Detective.
Yvette raised an eyebrow.
He's a sweet man, and he has a lovely wife, but he's eaten up with worry about our Mum. It's all he can think about. He's very smart, the best educated of all of us. He even went to university. But something made him drop out. He's a teacher now, but he's taken a leave of absence to care for Mum.
Interesting. So, you are all at home for your mother's sake? Jackman asked.
She nodded. We are, but it won't be for long.
Marie could believe that. Sheila Simmons had looked about as ill as it was possible to look without receiving a visit from Rory Wilkinson. She yearned to find out the truth about Brendan Simmons, and to do it while his mother was still around to hear the news. After Yvette left, Marie was alone in the CID room. The others had finished for the day and Jackman had gone to report to Ruth Crook. She thought about the case. It was damaging them. Though Jackman seemed to be firing on all cylinders, he was obviously deeply affected by the death of his sister-in-law, and consumed by worry about the safety of the rest of his family, especially the children. And Rosie, who had taken on thugs single-handed and had once bravely gone undercover to find a perverted killer, was all at once as weak as a kitten. Who would be next? Max? Head over heels in love with Rosie? He would be worried sick about her and wouldn't be able to fully engage with the investigation. That left Robbie, Gary, Charlie, and herself. Could the four of them take on this sadistic freak? She doubted it.
How come you're looking so thoughtful?
She hadn't heard Robbie Melton come in.
I thought you'd gone home, Rob. I was just thinking that this case is really taking its toll on the team.
Rosie? I heard Max telling Gary that she was in with the FMO earlier. Then he told us what happened.
It doesn't sound too good, does it?
Jackman is right, though, isn't he? There is always one case that seems to hit harder for some reason. Robbie nodded slowly and sat down beside her.
As far as that's concerned, I've written the book, and I very nearly didn't come through.
Marie closed her eyes. How thoughtless could she be? Poor Robbie had been terribly affected when his partner, Stella North, was shot. He had all but thrown in the towel. But Marie and Stella had been good friends, and Marie had persuaded Jackman to bring Robbie into their team. It turned out to be fortuitous for everyone. Robbie Melton was a damn good detective, and getting him into a different division away from all the ghosts and memories had been the saving of him.
Sorry, Robbie, that was thoughtless of me.
No, it's a fact, isn't it? Most coppers will tell you they have something that still gives them nightmares. I'm no special case.
Marie patted his arm.
Actually, you are special, Rob. You're a fighter, and you did get back on the horse.
I'm glad I did. And I hope Rosie does the same. She is a tough kid. Let's hope she bounces back from this.
Marie nodded.
I'll get Charlie to take over liaising with Beach Lacey. Would you work with Max for a few days, Rob? Keep an eye on him. I reckon he'll be pretty cut up at seeing her like this. I'm sure he could use a friend.
Of course I will. Robbie smiled at her. They are pretty close, aren't they?
Yep. I reckon if they weren't so career-minded, they'd be engaged by now.
Would it matter? They aren't high rank, so there's no problem with having a relationship, is there? Robbie asked.
Oh, there's nothing to stop them. But I know from personal experience that it isn't easy. It's the hours and the shifts, the unpredictable nature of the job. It worked for Bill and me, but we were in different jobs within the force. Even so, there were times when we hardly ever saw each other.
Think they'll get married?
Marie shrugged.
Who knows?
They certainly suit each other. She grinned at Robbie and punched him playfully.
You're a right little matchmaker, aren't you, Rob? I bet you like slushy films, too.
So what if When Harry Met Sally's my favourite film? I'll have a happy ending, that's all.
Nothing wrong with that. Now, how about giving a happy ending to a very sad woman with just a few weeks left to live? Can help me?
Robbie looked at her suspiciously.
I think so. I guarantee that if this works, you'll really feel like you're in a slushy film.
If it works?
Marie tutted.
It will work. Sheila Simmons will have a happy ending.
We're talking about the woman who has been the bane of every policeman's life for the past 20 years.
That Sheila Simmons. The very same. But it's what I want, okay?
And what D.S. Marie Evans wants, D.S. Marie Evans gets. Robbie threw up his hands.
Okay. Tell me what to do.
Chapter 19.
Ella Jarvis hadn't had the best of days. First, the washing machine broke down. Then, just after lunch, the school phoned her, saying that both boys had been particularly unsettled. Ryan had got into a fight. Nothing serious, just a scuffle. But he was so angry afterwards that he had had to be taken out of class. Miles had been tearful all day, and nothing seemed to placate him. So at 2, Ella had picked them up and brought them home. She let them watch their favourite film, Zootropolis, and promised to make them banana waffles with honey. People would say she was encouraging bad behaviour by rewarding them, but the kids were suffering, and she wanted to do whatever she could to make things better for them.
Can we wait and eat dinner with Daddy tonight, Auntie Ella?
Miles asked.
I'm not sure what time he'll be home, sweetheart. Shall I ring him and ask?
Miles shrugged and walked away.
If you like.
Ella sighed. James wasn't spending enough time with the boys. Yes, he was struggling, but he had to find a way to hide his grief and have some thought for his sons, or they would see it as yet more rejection. She phoned James from her room so the boys wouldn't hear. He said he was in the middle of a complex business deal, and he could well be late. Ella hung up and immediately rang Jackman.
I hate to ask this when I know how busy you are.
She explained about James.
Of course, I'll be there. 6:30, okay? I'll stay until the boys have gone to bed.
Ella ended the call. She wondered why James couldn't be more like Jackman, who made time while hunting a dangerous killer.
Auntie Ella?
Ryan stood in the doorway. She looked at his serious little face and her heart went out to him.
Come in.
She patted the bed beside her. Ryan sat down.
I'm sorry I got into a fight.
She put her arm around him.
It's not like you, Ryan. So you must have had a good reason. A kid in my class said my mum was a sinner and she wouldn't go to heaven. She said she'd burn in hell.
Ella swallowed.
Well, all I can say is, whoever said that was talking out of their bottom.
Ryan gave a little giggle. Ella held him tighter.
Your mummy wasn't a sinner. She was a good woman and a loving mother. Don't you dare listen to anyone who says different. She's looking down on you from heaven, and she'll always love you.
He looked up.
So she won't burn in hell? No, Ryan. Your mummy has died, and that's very sad, but she's at peace now.
Ryan nodded.
Did my brother ask if Daddy will be home for dinner?
Before she could speak, he said in a flat voice,
He'll be working. Miles is stupid sometimes. He is working, that's true, but Uncle Rowan is coming instead. Yay! Do you think he'll play Cars 3 with us?
Is he good?
No, he's rubbish, that's why we like to play him. Ryan,
Ella asked.
Do you know why Miles was so upset today?
Ryan pulled a face.
He's having bad dreams. Oh no, he should call me when that happens. What are they about, do you know?
Ryan hesitated.
He dreams he sees Mummy's bad man.
Ella drew in a breath.
Mummy's bad man? Uh-huh. Mummy warned us never to talk to strangers, because there are bad men out there.
Well, that's quite right. But she only meant you to be careful. We've all told you not to speak to strangers or get into cars or to take anything from anyone you don't know, haven't we? He wrinkled up his face.
Yes, but it wasn't like that, Auntie Ella. Mum meant someone really bad. We saw him once. Now Miles sees him all the time. In bad dreams.
Had they really seen someone? Ella swallowed and said calmly,
Will you tell Uncle Rowan about it when he gets here?
The little boy nodded seriously.
Yes, but we'd better do it man to man. Miles will get upset, so I can't say it in front of him. I'll tell Uncle on my own. You can look after Miles.
She nodded gravely.
That's very sensible, Ryan. After we've played Cars 3.
Ryan jumped up and ran off. Ella sat on, feeling sick. She listened out for the boys playing downstairs, and then rang Jackman again, relating what Ryan had said. Jackman told her not to worry. He'd come as planned, and they'd take it from there. Ella hung up, very relieved that she had Jackman to rely on. If it was up to James to sort these things out, well, it didn't bear thinking about. Jackman sat in his office and stared at the table, wondering what to do. Then he thought of Laura Archer. She answered his call immediately, sounding very upbeat. Her old mentor, Sam Page, was with her, having dropped in for a chat.
Do you think Sam and I might be able to meet the children?
I think that would be a great idea, Laura.
What if I suggest that we all go this evening? I'll pick up a takeaway so we don't put Ella to too much trouble. We could eat and then you could evaluate the problem.
Jackman heard Laura speak to Sam, who agreed, and they arranged to meet at Laura's place.
Choose something that the boys love to eat, she said, and then we can all relax and get to know each other a bit. And try not to worry, Jackman. This could just be a bogeyman dream. It would be perfectly understandable under the circumstances.
Jackman knew that to be true, but he still worried. He glanced at the clock, rang Ella, and hurried down to his car. Robbie opened the door to his apartment. He hung up his jacket, kicked off his shoes, and looked around. Stella had once said that his expensive and classy pad had all the warmth of a premier inn. He had never mastered the art of making the places he lived in homely. He certainly didn't want chintzy wallpapers or floral curtains, but he would have liked to live somewhere that was welcoming and warm to come back to. He went to the kitchen, opened the freezer door and stared at the stacks of ready meals. He pulled out a lamb moussaka and checked the fridge to see if there was any salvageable green salad. He washed the few leaves, nuked the moussaka, and sat at the breakfast bar to eat. The kitchen looked very male. Its black marble surfaces and black, silver and white tiled walls were cold and clinical. He needed to do something to make this place a home. A plant? He snorted. It would take more than a plant to give some life to the place. He finished his dinner, put the plate and cutlery into the dishwasher, and wondered why on earth he was feeling this way. Usually he was quite happy with his domain. Perhaps it was the talk about Max and Rosie, and Marie describing her life with Bill. His relationship with Stella North had been the closest he had ever had. They were nothing more than colleagues, but he had loved her. After 2 years he still missed her, but he had moved on, and now he was content. His unease had to stem from the case they were working. Marie was becoming more and more certain that there had been a miscarriage of justice, and Brendan Simmons had died an innocent man. Robbie had never been a drinker. His parents' embarrassing drunken capers had turned him into a teetotaler right from his teens. Then he met a man named Harvey Cash, a witness in a murder case and an alcoholic. Something in Harvey's situation had moved him, and he couldn't forget the man. Later, he and Marie had gone to Spain for a holiday, and they helped Harvey give up the booze and get his life back on track. While they were there, Marie had introduced him to a drink called the Tom Collins. While Harvey sobered up, Robbie learned that an alcoholic drink could be pleasurable. 5 minutes later, he was sitting on his leather sofa, sipping his cocktail and thinking about Marie. When they went away to Spain together, the messroom jokes about toy boys had been endless, but Marie didn't care. They were friends, and they needed a break, that was all. But recently, Robbie found that he was looking at her differently, his gaze lingering. He had started to worry about her when she rode her powerful new motorbike, nicknamed Harvey, after their friend. Robbie took a mouthful, and the ice made his teeth sing. Suddenly, it was clear to him why he wanted his home to seem more welcoming. He didn't want Marie to see it like Stella had, cold and inhospitable as a hotel room. He drained the rest of his drink. All right. So he needed help with the place. Well, he knew exactly who to ask. On the way to Raynham Lodge, Jackman, Laura, and Sam discussed the possibility that Miles really had seen the man who'd terrorized Sarah. Jackman glanced at Sam in the rearview mirror.
We can't discount the fact that the child could have seen him. After all, it seems he must have been stalking Sarah for quite some time. So how do we go about this?
Sam leaned forward.
We start by making friends with the boys and putting them at their ease,
The more comfortable and relaxed the child is, the more likely he is to open up.
Laura held up a large bag of drawing materials.
I've brought these. I suggest that after dinner you and Sam talk to Ryan, Jackman, while Ella and I do a spot of art therapy with Miles.
Ah, like we do when gathering evidence from child witnesses.
Exactly. It often produces some quite revealing disclosures, Laura said.
I've used it with children with autism as well, Sam added, with remarkable effect, I have to say.
How are the boys doing generally, Jackman?
Asked Laura.
I gather it's a bit of a roller coaster, up one minute down the next. Ella had to fetch them out of school today, which is the first time that's happened.
It won't be the last, I'm afraid, said Sam. Things will upset them, an unkind word or a sudden memory, but it's all part of the grieving process. Children can be incredibly resilient. Given time, they might just surprise you.
My brother doesn't help. God knows, I can't blame him. I mean, he's just lost the love of his life, his lodestar.
Jackman didn't want to criticize his brother, but he resented the way James was behaving.
He promised to try to do all he could to help me discover who did this to Sarah, but instead he's immersed himself in work. Almost always now the kids are in bed and asleep by the time he comes home. Then he's off and out early. I'm scared they'll start to blame themselves.
Ella would appear to be the positive energy in their lives at the moment, Sam said.
Jackman nodded. Thank God my mother brought her in. She's holding the whole thing together.
How do the boys regard Ella? Asked Sam.
They call her auntie. She was once their nanny, and I think she's a mother substitute now.
Is that a bad thing?
Jackman glanced at Sam.
Not at this stage. They need someone to nurture them, and they trust Ella. In time, they will adapt to their loss. Terrible things happen to families the world over, and yet people go on.
Sam sounded sad, and Jackman wondered if there was something more personal behind his words.
Laura turned to look at Sam.
I sometimes wonder if a mother figure is quite as important as we like to think. If a child has someone in their life that they can look up to, a support figure, that's what counts.
Sam nodded.
That's a valid point. Same-sex couples and widowed husbands often do a fantastic job of bringing up their children, simply through their love and care. Do I sense another research paper coming on, Laura?
Not exactly. I'm busy working on a paper on narcissistic parenting at the moment.
Sam chuckled. Oh, interesting stuff. I'd be fascinated to read that when it's finished.
Jackman stared at the road ahead, terribly aware of Laura Archer's body so close to his.
Ella had told the boys that their uncle was bringing two friends with him, and a big bucket of popcorn chicken. She suspected it was the chicken, but the two of them seemed perfectly happy at the prospect. She, on the other hand, would have been happier to see Jackman alone. She couldn't help resenting the fact that Jackman had brought in professional help.
Or was that it?
Wasn't it just that she liked being with Jackman, just the two of them? Maybe she was imagining things, but she felt they had developed an easy, comfortable comradeship together. Headlights scoured the drive, and Ella stood up. All at once, she felt ashamed of her thoughts. She was scared, too, afraid of what these professionals might bring to light.
Chapter 20. Very soon, the interviews would begin. By now, the police would have made all the right connections. They would know that the suicides were not what they seemed, and that the common denominator was the death of Lindsay Ashcroft. Now they would be looking for someone who believed that the murder trial had failed them. He stood up and went to pour himself a drink. It was strange to be so at ease, not to feel the need to cross the fens to his quiet place, or slip unnoticed into the church. For once, he was happy to remain at home and contemplate his next move. He sipped the bourbon, his favourite. Wild turkey rare breed, cost over £50 a bottle, and was worth every penny. He liked the name, too.
rare breed. Just like him.
He rested his feet on the coffee table, which was strewn with books and documents. He liked to study murder, especially the psychology of killers. Of course, he was looking for someone like him, but he was gradually coming to the conclusion that he was one of a kind, that his method was unprecedented. This was deeply satisfying. It took true genius to make your victims kill themselves. He lifted his glass and drank a toast to himself. Here's to the creator of the complicated death. He hoped that the police would interview him, and if they did, should he extend the game and watch them chasing their tails? Or should he give Jackman all the information he needed? He slowly swirled the amber liquid, causing flickers of golden light to tremble in the crystal glass. Ultimately, he wanted Jackman to know. It was just a matter of when. He placed the glass on a coaster, picked up a folder from the table, and paged through his long-term strategy. By now it was quite a thick volume, and all but complete. It was unfortunate that the judge who'd presided over the trial had recently succumbed to cirrhosis of the liver, but it was consoling to know that he had been the cause of the judge's heavy liquor consumption. Years of constant irritation, the veiled threats to one's family and friends do take their toll. He grunted. He had almost forgotten his final dilemma. He had always wondered what would happen when his slow revenge had reached its climax. Now he knew. He was too good. This wasn't his epilogue at all. It was his new beginning. It was impossible to give up now. He had found his reason for living. There was one small loose end to tie up, and then he would be his own man, free to start planning new enterprises. He thought again of all the people he had come to know over the course of the years, people with complex lives and deep emotional bonds. He looked at the folder on his lap. There was a whole section on the Jackman family alone, and what he didn't know about the detective's work colleagues wasn't worth knowing. He stretched. Decisions. Decisions. Much to Jackman's surprise, the evening got off to a flying start. The boys immediately took to Sam Page and were clearly enchanted by Laura. Only Ella seemed a little on edge. After the meal, the adults joined the children in a game of Lego Jurassic World. After the games, Laura produced her sketchbook and coloured pens, and Miles happily started to draw.
"Not your thing, Ryan,"
Jackman gently cuffed the boy's shoulder.
"Not really. I'm pants at art."
"Me too. Couldn't even draw water."
It took a while, then a small smile spread across Ryan's face.
"Don't give up the day job, Uncle."
Sam joined them.
"Do you think this is a good moment to have a quiet word, young man?"
Ryan seemed to be trying to decide. Sam lowered his voice.
"We don't want to upset Miles, do we? So perhaps you could tell your uncle and me about his nightmares. What do you think?"
Ryan nodded slowly.
"You're right, Sam. Would you like to see my bedroom?"
With a quick look at Laura and Ella, Jackman followed Sam and Ryan from the room. Miles didn't even look up. Upstairs, Ryan explained what Miles had seen. Their mother had taken them to the park and sat on a bench with another mother while they played football. Then all at once she grabbed them and hustled them back to the car. They had protested because she hadn't even let them fetch their new football.
"We thought we'd done something wrong, but Mummy said it was nothing to do with us."
Ryan bit his lip.
"Then Miles suddenly said, 'Was it that man by the gates?' And Mummy took hold of him and shook him and asked him what he had seen. She was so angry, and Miles just cried and cried."
"Did you see him too?" asked Jackman gently.
"Sort of.
I knew someone was there, but I was busy playing and I didn't take any notice.
It was Miles who saw him.
And because Mummy was so frightened, he thinks it was one of the bad men we were warned about.
He swallowed.
Now Miles thinks the bad man killed Mummy, and he has nightmares.
Sam put an arm around Ryan and said he'd been very brave to talk to them.
Laura is getting Miles to draw different things. It's a way of getting someone to tell you something through pictures.
Is it important?
Very, said Jackman. Ryan, have either of you seen him since? The boy looked down.
A couple of times. Is that why you all came tonight?
Jackman nodded.
We came because we love you and want to find out exactly what happened to your mummy.
That's good.
Then Ryan grinned.
Is Laurie your girlfriend, Uncle?
Sam laughed and Jackman spluttered.
No. What made you think that?
Nothing. I'm glad, though. She's very nice, but I think Auntie Ella would be a bit upset.
Then he jumped up and left the room.
Out of the mouths of babes?
Sam was trying not to laugh again. Jackman sat on the edge of the boy's bed and stared at Sam open-mouthed.
What on earth?
Sam chuckled.
That boy is very perceptive, isn't he?
Funnily enough, I was thinking the same thing myself earlier.
Two fair damsels, eh? What a man. Oh, no, Sam, really, I mean, I never... Just enjoy it. It's a predicament most men would give their eye teeth to be in.
But Jackman's heart was sinking. Not now. He had to stay focused on the investigation. He stood up and looked at Sam.
Not a word, my friend, please.
And now we must go and see what Laura's art therapy produced.
Of course. My lips are sealed.
But as he left the room, Jackman could hear Sam's stifled laughter behind him. Back in the lounge, Jackman looked surreptitiously from Ella to Laura, feeling very uncomfortable. Oh well, just as long as Ryan didn't come out with any further insights, he should be okay. Then he noticed the two women's solemn expressions and knew that Laura's drawing session had paid off.
Time for bed, lads.
Ella shooed her two charges towards the door.
Say goodnight and thank you for the meal.
The boys thanked them and reluctantly made their way upstairs. As soon as Ella came back into the room, Laura held up a drawing.
He's a good little artist, which helps.
But we don't like his subject matter, added Ella. Neither did Jackman. He took the picture and peered at it.
What did you ask him to draw?
Initially, we kept it light and had him drawing superheroes and animals.
She pointed to some brightly coloured pictures on the table.
But then we asked him to draw something very good and something very bad.
This was the result. The paper was divided with a thick black vertical line. To the left, Miles had drawn an angel with a bright yellow halo and large white wings standing on a fluffy cloud, with her feet surrounded by pink and red flowers. The word mummy was carefully inscribed along the bottom. On the right-hand side, the boy had drawn a much more complex image. Jackman could make out trees, swings, and something that appeared to be a flying saucer that he soon realized was a roundabout. Then there was a path with a lone football sitting on it. All that would have been fine, but Miles had added a tall figure standing at the end of the path. Jackman looked closer, shocked at the sinister atmosphere such a young child had managed to convey. The man was drawn entirely in black pen. He was standing straight as a pole and wore a long coat and a hat with a brim. But it was his face that made Jackman shiver. Miles had made him look like an alien, with a broad forehead, pointed chin, small mouth and nostrils, and very large black almond-shaped eyes. Those black eyes seemed to stare back at Jackman from the paper. The title was The Bad Man.
They were watched,
Jackman whispered to himself.
Sarah and the children.
That's what we think too.
Laura glanced at Ella, who nodded. Jackman pulled out his phone.
Sorry, I need to talk to my superintendent,
he muttered and walked into the kitchen. Ruth Crook answered almost immediately.
Ruth, I think Ella Jarvis, my brother James, and particularly the two boys are in danger.
He told her about the drawing and waited for her answer. Normally, I'd say it's far from enough to warrant action, but with this dangerous individual still loose, and as I trust your judgment, it's either a safe house or I can probably arrange to put a couple of officers on round-the-clock surveillance. It's up to you, Rowan.
I'll talk to Ella. She's say more than my brother. I'll see what she thinks and get back to you. And thanks, Ruth. I appreciate it.
Jackman didn't return to the others immediately. He was haunted by Miles's picture. And something else, too. The drawing was the work of a 7-year-old, and clearly just a stylized impression. But there was something about the figure that struck a chord in Jackman's memory. The moment he saw it, Jackman had the unsettling feeling that he knew this man. DCI Cameron Walker smiled at his wife across the dinner table.
I'm so glad to be home tonight.
Kay Walker gave him a reproving stare.
And are you not glad to be home with me every night?
Then she grinned.
Of course I am, but... joking.
Her smile vanished.
I've not seen you so worried since your Darren got injured on duty. This investigation is really getting to you, isn't it?
That's an understatement. It's a bastard. The way this man destroys lives is beyond all comprehension. I don't think I, or any of the other officers for that matter, have ever come across such a heartless, evil individual. I heard from Sultan just before I left. He's already taken another 2 lives.
Kay groaned.
Oh no. More innocence.
Cameron nodded. He knew he should not talk about his ongoing cases, but he and Kay were practically joined at the hip and told each other everything.
Not only that, but one of Jackman's brightest young detectives is traumatized after walking in on the killer's latest murder fest. She was our liaison with Sultan, but the FMO has signed her off. He chewed his steak thoughtfully. We've come off lightly here in Beach Lacey with just 1 death. Poor old Jackman is on the firing line and well and truly taking the flak.
Kay sighed.
I shouldn't say thank heavens, I know, but I will.
I know what you mean. Still, I have to help him all I can.
Oh, I know that. It wouldn't be like you to shy away from anything or leave a fellow officer wallowing in the shit.
Kay grinned.
Excuse the vernacular.
I'm thinking we can help him out by taking over some of the background research stuff while he gets down to the nitty-gritty. We have just about exhausted our lines of inquiry regarding our woman, but his team are way ahead on looking into the Ashcroft murder trial. I think he'd appreciate it.
Kay helped herself to more mustard.
I'm sure he'll appreciate any help you can give him. What's he like, this D.I. Jackman? Is he like your friend, D.I. Nicky Galena?
Cam laughed loudly.
He's nothing like Nicky, except for the fact that they are both damn good detectives. Jackman is a gentleman in all senses of the word.
I like him. He even offered to share responsibility for this case, when he needn't have done.